The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am here with James Kluwer, who is MW, also the owner of Fine Vintage. And you go to finevintageltd.com, massive wine educator, largest one in North America, luxury tours, helps with wine jobs, and just does a ton of stuff and is on the pod now. James, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Matt.
Let's start here. You started the company back in 1995. I'm wondering what the genesis was, the reason behind starting this endeavor.
Yes, well, I worked in, after university, I went to Bordeaux and I worked for a producer there. Started off just sort of as an intern working in the cellars, and then I got hired in the sales department. I used to know of a company, this is pre-internet, okay,
right.
This is 1993, so I knew of a company in Hong Kong called Fine Vintage, and they were a wine importer and a very good one. And I just had this dream that I would have my own company, and it would be a wine company. And I thought, well, I have to give it a name. So I went with Fine Vintage. So that was the sort of, the background, the genesis of, how it started.
Interesting thing there is, I didn't even think about this. Not only wine education, but just general knowledge of what's going on in the wine world. How different was that before the internet, when you had the odd magazine or trade publication, but for the most part, people would mostly be in the dark about what's going on in other regions of the world.
Yeah, 100%. In fact, looking back on it now, basically you had the magazines, mainly Decanter, Wine Spectator, Harper's, sort of regional magazines, and then some trade magazines. And then you had sort of the books, right? But that was basically it, right? There were, news came through those publications, those print publications. So you sort of eagerly awaited for, the Decanter magazine to arrive in the mail back in the day. So yeah, information was much more limited.
So how much? I mean, when you start a company, when you start a business like this, that's a lot of work. I imagine your love of wine had been going on for years before you decided to do this.
Well, yeah, it had actually been going on for a little while, because I sort of got intrigued by wine when I was about 16 or so. My parents took me to Bordeaux for a sort of a wine trip, right? And so we went into some chateau there, and one in Sauternes, and the count handed me a glass of Sauternes out of the barrel, as if, that's what you do to a 16-year-old or whatever. And so it was about 10:30 in the morning. I was drinking this, and I thought, wow, okay, I think I might be on to something. So I was intrigued by it pretty young. And then I worked for a wine importer in Hong Kong for about 6 months when I was 19. And then, yeah, I visited some more vineyards in South America on sort of a gap year type thing. So, yeah, it had been brewing for a while. Fermenting, I guess we say, should say.
It's a great origin story. Drinking Sauternes from the barrel as a 16-year-old absolutely can do it. Well, why don't you tell people, and because we'll get into it. Also, I want to hear about just you getting your Master of Wine in 2008 and what that was like. Tell the people a little bit more about your company and what you offer.
Yeah, well, we started off back in 1995. I went down to a government office in Oakville, Ontario. In fact, I was living there, and I just registered it as a sole proprietorship at the time. And we were actually I was acting as an agent, importing wine from France into Ontario and selling it to the LCBO and through the consignment program. But over the years, things things evolved. And today we have about 22 wine schools around Canada and the United States, and we mostly teach the WSET professional certification courses. But actually, our wine tour business is bigger, and we do a lot of luxury tours around the world to the great wineries. And basically, these are 5-day extravaganzas of eating, drinking, and being merry in comfort. So those are our sort of core activities. And then we have peripheral things like our sort of Wine Jobs Canada website, which we sort of started on a whim, but it's turned into the sort of the hub for the Canadian industry. And we have sites in a bunch of other countries, similar story, like in England and so on, that employers post jobs and then people use the site to apply. So it's, helpful. I mean, that was going back to, what was it like pre-internet? I mean, when you were looking for a job, how did you do that? You had to send out sort of, letters.
Yeah, you had to get the envelope, a stamp, the address, handwrite it. Oh, I remember those days. Okay, there's so many places I want to go. Let's start here. How different is a Bordeaux tour today with your company versus when you went to visit there as a teenager?
Well, our Bordeaux tour today, I mean, well, I would say that the quality of the wines, first of all, has dramatically improved over the last, 40 years, I guess. And certainly they're much more sort of geared up for hospitality. I mean, back in the 1980s, 1990s, going to actually visit one of these chateau was almost a curious thing to do. And at least from the point of view of the chateau owners, they really didn't have visitors. Now they're much more geared up for that, at least in some cases. Some of them are still very sort of closed shop. And so, yeah, I mean, but one thing that hasn't changed is the food in France has always been good, and it's still great, and the scenery and the history, and there are a lot of things that are very much constant. And so, yeah, we love our tours.
Yeah, and Bordeaux is, I think, is really good when it comes to wine tourism. I find the exact opposite, and I've traveled all around, and I found Barolo, Piemonte, excellent. South Africa, excellent. So many places. There's one area where it feels like they just say, "Get away from us," and it's Burgundy.
Yes, I thought you were going to say that.
You knew where I was going. How different is it to try to do a great Burgundy tour versus Bordeaux? And they're both incredibly famous wine regions, but they're very, it's, you got to burn a lot more calories to do it well in Burgundy.
Yeah, you do. I mean, there's a handful of places in Bordeaux too that are still very much closed shop, like Petrus, for example. But in Burgundy, there's a few more of those type of places, like DRC and so on. But that said, I'm very fortunate because I collaborate with a number of other masters of wine who are sort of specialists in certain areas. And so between us, we can often get appointments at places that, are not necessarily easy to access. For example, Charles Curtis is the host in Burgundy and Champagne, and he writes books on it, and he also reviews the wine for Decanter magazine and various others. So that helps.
And for anyone touring, I mean, this, especially if you're going to Burgundy, I would definitely recommend your company because it is hard. And just anyone who's traveling, you're going to have to work harder and plan more for Burgundy than you would for Bordeaux, or you certainly would for Champagne.
Sure.
Let's bounce around. Let's get to you for a second. Master of Wine in 2008. What were the days like leading up? I'd love to, I mean, I was one level below. I got my diploma back in
Okay.
2015. And there's a massive gap from what I did to then that final level. It's a huge jump. What were those days like leading up, and what was the exams like?
What were the days like leading up? Well, I guess that, they was stressful, but I guess almost a little bit eerily so, because you put so much time, effort, money, sort of emotion into it. And it only happens once a year. You got basically around a 4% chance of success. You never feel ready. You know, it's sort of very much do or die because of the opportunity cost. You know, you put, say, 8 years into something. It took me 11 in the end. For some of the exams, 8 years of sort of preparation for, you know, three, for, you know, for 1 week's of test. Yeah, it's a different emotion, I guess. But I think it sort of teaches you maybe to try and be ultra calm under intense pressure.
Do you, and if you don't remember, because I know that 2008 was a long time ago, I still remember having a massive blister on my finger for all the writing. And I called a German, I got a German spätburgunder gun to write. But on another one, I was going down the path of these are Spanish wines. And then I realized, no, this is Loire, you idiot. That's a Cab Franc. You've got to go back and doing all, like, I remember these things. Mine was 2015, so not as long ago. I always like to take people, if they can, to peek behind the curtain of what some of these tests, exams, and tastings are like.
I mean, basically, at the time, the tasting exam, which is often the one people most curious about, was 3 consecutive days. Okay, it's basically, it's not that many wines. It's 12 wines per day. Okay, for 3 days. It's a 2 hour and 15 minute exam. There's, you know, as a friend once said to me, he said, James, you know, there's a lot to be said for getting the wine right. And certainly at the master of wine level, I'm speculating here, but you almost have to have at least 30 of the 36 wines right in their home, you know, like nailed it. And the problem is, so it's a high bar. Right. And there's really very little margin for error, room for error. They structure the questions in such a challenging way that they may say, okay, wines 1 through 9 are all from, you know, different countries. Okay. All right. The problem with that is that if you get a wine sort of in the wrong country, it's like a domino effect. You know,
Right.
you thought the wine number two was definitely from, you know, I'm going to come out with Greece or something like that. No, that was wine number seven, you know, and bomb, the whole house of cards is gone, right? It's done. You're out. There's so many, what I would describe, what felt like booby traps everywhere. It's not, in my personal opinion, I don't think it's designed to pass, which maybe is a shame, you know.
Do you remember what you opened to celebrate when you passed this incredibly hard test?
Yes, I do. In fact, and you know, you're gonna laugh. You know, in the afternoons, after the tasting, there's the written test. The written test goes on for 5 days, and so when it was all over, I walked out of there absolutely so shattered, right? And I saw a 7-Eleven across the way. And I went in there and I opened the cooler and I grabbed a six pack of Budweiser. It was the most direct opposite thing you could possibly ever do. But then when I got home and, you know, call it the dust had settled, yeah, I cracked a nice bottle of champagne with my wife. Then it was a more proper celebration, shall we say.
But to be fair, the OA Budweiser, that was a great vintage for.
You know, absolutely fresh as a daisy, you know.
How relieved was your wife when you passed? Because it's one thing that doesn't get discussed. When you're studying, it takes so much of your life that you almost, you know, you almost have to shut out a lot of the outside world. How relieved was your wife when you passed?
Oh, I think hugely. Well, yeah, definitely hugely, because I mean they are along for the, you know, the suffering or the ride. Yeah, someone did tell me it's called the divorce course, you know, you know, there's a lot of time sacrifice and sort of, you know, just a lifestyle sort of everybody's sort of invested in this, and so big relief for her, definitely.
Yeah, same thing. It was the same thing with my girlfriend as well. And by the way, I read to prepare for it, did you work vintages in like Australia or California, like to prepare for all of this?
Yeah, I did actually. I'd done that vintage in 1993 in Bordeaux, and then I think in 1998 I went and worked with Stephen Pannell at Tintara in McLaren Vale in Australia. Then another year I went back to the Barossa, to Australia, but to the Barossa, and worked at Yalumba. And then I worked at a handful of places in Napa and Sonoma and stuff. Yeah, I mean, you really have to, I would say. You can't just be sort of watching. You have to be doing.
Well, that must help so much. Like when you're thinking, when you're asked questions about fermentation, about vinification, vineyard work, and just how different Barossa versus Sonoma versus Bordeaux is in terms of nerdy things, yield management, pruning, that's all completely different.
Yeah, totally different, and just understanding the cellar work or the vineyard work by doing, it's different. Like you see tractors going up and down, straddling vine rows and stuff. You think, oh, okay, they're just sort of spraying or whatever. But to actually drive a tractor is much more tricky than meets the eye. You wipe out a few vines and you realize that, you're not driving quite as straight as Jean-Pierre, It's that type of experience that gives you a more complete understanding, I think.
Well, jump over to the wine jobs thing. How many more wine jobs are there in Canada now versus when you first added this element to the company, to the website?
Definitely more. Definitely more. There's many more wineries, we can say. I mean, I think we started the site back in about 2010. In the Okanagan Valley in British Columbia, there was far fewer wineries then than there are now. I mean, they must have added maybe another sort of 150 odd or so since then, I'm guessing ballpark. And certainly Niagara and then other regions in Canada have sort of grown. Maybe the number of retail stores in some places has also sort of expanded with changes in legislation and that type of thing. But that said, I think that obviously right now, the industry is contracting a little bit, and so people are definitely, there's a reduction trend in agencies and retailers and wineries and so on and so forth. So hard to say. There's more now, but the industry was maybe in better shape then.
Well, it was curious about asking about the industry. You hear trends that there are fewer people or there's less wine being consumed, and I certainly hear that from people I know who work for wine consignment companies. Is this just because of economy being down or prices going up, inflation? A lot of that happened because of COVID or the war in Ukraine. I mean, what would your reasoning being behind reduction in wine consumption?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a whole series of reasons, but I would say personally, I think that the number one driver is related to government health advisories. Basically, a fairly strong anti-alcohol lobby that's saying, you shouldn't consume any alcohol at all, no matter what it is. I think that that's and the sort of call it the wellness mantra or culture of our day, which is great, but it doesn't really sort of help people feel better about cracking into a few more bottles of wine. So there's that. You've got a lot of people saying, oh, people in their 20s, they don't drink wine anymore. I'm not so sure that they ever really did drink a whole ton anyway, so I think that might be a bit overblown. People often tend to start drinking wine maybe a little bit later on. I think the price of wine is definitely a factor. I mean, prices have gone up for a lot of wines, a lot of regions. And also, I guess things are cyclical. What was super trendy 15, 10 years ago, maybe it isn't quite as trendy today, but it's not to say, it might not come back, or it's just an adjustment, it's a correction.
I will say every wine is better tasting than White Claw. You bring up a good point. Whenever you hear, oh, it's the young people not drinking, I'm like, I didn't fall in love with wine until I was after 25 years old. So that's a good point. I never even, James, I never even thought about that. Going back to the tours, what are some of your, and this is a hard one because you must have a ton, what are some of your favorite memories, like your favorite locations that always stick out for you with the tours you've done in the past, in anywhere in the world?
Definitely had some very memorable times in Tuscany. That's been a destination that sort of seems to make memories, I would say. And we've done some amazing things, and we still do them, like having ridiculous Brunello-fueled lunches in small little private chapels at a boutique superstar winery tucked away in the hills with incredible food and with the owner and the winemaker and drinking old vintage Brunellos. I mean, it's just a it's a life experience. It really is. And champagne too, drinking old champagnes at famous houses or in a Roederer in the private dining room of the owner of Louis Roederer drinking 93 Cristal out of Magnum. I mean, these are not everyday experiences, but that's really what we try and do, actually, is we try and create through our contacts and our knowledge and our own experiences these fabulous tours, doing things you just wouldn't be able to by yourself.
If you're having a Brunello fueled lunch, you're probably that may compromise your dinner.
Yes. Well, the Wednesday on our tour in Tuscany is your one free evening because of that. So it's
Smart. Very smart.
we know, the pulse of what people can physically do, but fun times.
Well, it seems like the benefit for you, or for people that are going on using your company, is they get to see things that the average person wouldn't, a person that doesn't have the contacts because they don't live in a world of wine. They don't know other MWs or other winemakers. Like I've been lucky enough with my contacts to be able to see and try 50-year-old bottles of Volnay, but there's only so many people out there that spend most of their life with wine. I would imagine it's to, for people that go to find vintage before your site, it's for comfort. Also, don't have to worry about driving and to get to peek behind the curtain of maybe something that most people will never get to see.
That's exactly it. It's sort of a behind the scenes look at the region or experience of the region. Meeting the owners and winemakers is one thing, but having the master of wine there, sort of explaining how things are working, especially on the business front too. We get into all of that, and so many different topics. It's a really sort of immersive experience into agriculture, the science of winemaking, the culture of the region, the food, commerce, branding, marketing, everything. It's fun.
And people enjoy the wine more when they feel a connection. If they meet the winemaker, if they're out in the vineyard, if they see even just a couple of the steps that go into making that wine, you're going to appreciate it more because now you feel a connection with it.
100%, 100%. It's also, to fully understand a region. I mean, you have to go there at least once, at
I went to
minimum.
Bordeaux a second time, and to convince my girlfriend to go there, I ran the marathon because
Oh, no way.
she loves to travel, so I'm like, okay, I want to go back to Bordeaux. She's like, well, there's other areas. What if I run the marathon? Okay, we can go back to Bordeaux.
Oh, fantastic how you did that. Oh, that's an amazing marathon, because all the chateau come out and they're handing runners glasses of wine, and congratulations. I'm not sure whether I would be able to make it through the Bordeaux marathon. I did one in Napa once upon a time, but they weren't dishing out wine,
Oh, but I hope they did it on the valley floor. It's the one thing, don't
Yes.
run marathons in wine regions. Wine regions are hilly. Even in Bordeaux, it was hilly.
No, definitely. It was just down the Silverado Trail from Calistoga to Napa, basically. So there was a slight downhill, which worked for me for sure.
You're lucky. I was uphill and it was September 1st. It was hot, but we're not here to talk about me. What's it like judging Decanter World Wine Awards? Is there pressure? Is it just pure fun? I mean, that must be daunting because there's so many wines you have to judge.
Yes, judging. What can I say? I've done some judging and judge for Decanter. I don't judge anymore. I have some sort of personal reasons for that have resulted because I've been involved in wine production. Basically, I've helped start quite a few wineries in Canada, and then I've had my own brand in Napa Valley as well, and just sort of involved in the production side a fair bit in my life.
Yeah, then you'd have to almost step away from it because, yeah, the conflict of interest.
Yeah, there's that definitely. So, but actually, more so, it's for other reasons, and that is because at some competitions, not all, the judges are expected to taste and evaluate about 100 wines before lunch. Okay, I can't do that accurately, and each wine is only getting sort of, maybe a minute or two of your attention. When you put so much work into creating a wine, if it's just given that short time span to be evaluated, I disagree. So I don't participate myself as a judge because of that. At least that some of the competitions are like that. It's sorry, probably shouldn't say that, but tend to
Well, no, but
just.
that makes total sense. The time and effort to make that bottle of wine, and then in 88 seconds you're assessing the quality of it. Yeah, I totally get that because there's pressure on you, and you want to honor the work being put into it. And if it's a cattle call like that, you can't possibly be expected to do that. That makes total sense. So, what's the work you're doing now with other wineries, helping other wineries start?
I occasionally work with people who are wanting to get into the wine business. For example, Phantom Creek Winery in the Okanagan Valley was, the largest one we've done. And there's a gentleman, a businessman who wanted to get into the wine business. He'd never been in that business. He was from China. Living in Vancouver, had the capital to spend and needed someone to basically get it going and organize it and sort of set the train in motion. So those can be very time consuming, sort of all consuming, starting a business for someone else. I mean, the winery, I think it cost $100 million to build. So we're designing that, buying all the vineyards, assembling all the team, and at a certain point, I mean, it is sort of it feels like it starts to feel like a full-time job, and that's not what I want to do. So, it's definitely been tremendous learning.
And also, you don't want to stretch yourself out too thin with, the education, the tours, and the jobs and everything
Exactly.
else. James, what advice? We only have a couple minutes left. What advice would you give to people that are getting into the wine industry that want to take the courses to study and learn more about it? Is there any sort of just general piece of advice you've given in the past?
Yeah, definitely. I would say that if possible, if time permits, to go to a wine region and work the harvest. You can often just write to wineries and ask them if they would take you for sort of a month, 2 months, 2 weeks might be a little short for them or something. But, trying to work a harvest, that's really great experience. And then I think the WSET courses are fabulous, obviously. You've got, level 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I do know some people who've gone through those. including the level four in about 3 years, 3, 4 years. They really race through them, and then after that, if you have some experience, you could apply to say the Board of Master Sommeliers or the Institute of Masters. I mean, some people, they really fast track things, but obviously some actual hands-on experience. Working for an importer, working at a retailer, just, being actually involved.
Where do people go? If they want to go to the website, they want to learn more about you, your company, your services. James, where do people go for more information?
They go to findvintageltd.com, so findvintageltd.com, and everything is there. They're looking for a job. That's a different site, winejobscanada.com, and then we have them in the States and England and various other places too. So yeah, that's our site, that's our shop, that's where it happens.
What's your next tour? Do you got one coming up, like one you're planning, one you're looking forward to? Where's the next region?
Yes, I'm going to do one myself in Spain in about 3 weeks, and then one in Argentina at the end of November. Yeah, I sort of bounce around, go and do them, check on them, work on them, all that type of stuff. So, yeah, it's good times.
I've only done the Rueda region. I want to go back. I want Montsant and the Priorat. That is like the one of the next big trips I just got to go deep in all the Grenache.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. Yeah, well, we'll be going. We do go to Rueda, and then, but we're mostly in Ribera del Duero and Rioja, and but Spain is, Spain is awesome, and Spain is fun.
Hey, James, really appreciate it. Again, congratulations, not only on the Master of Wine, but starting this business in 95, growing it, helping people, trying to find jobs. I mean, that's a very difficult thing. And as you said, the industry can be volatile, just like most industries. But I really appreciate, James, you joining the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Love talking to you, Matt. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, iTunes, Apple, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.